Kia ora, and welcome to Family, Whānau and Disability, a podcast brought to you by Parent to Parent New Zealand. We are here for the many Kiwi families out there caring for a disabled child or family member. We know the journey caring for a disabled or a neurodiverse child is not an easy or a straightforward one. So this podcast is a place to explore the issues that affect us, to share stories, swap tips, and even have a laugh or two. We would love for you to join us each month, so make sure you subscribe. Please also be aware that the views shared are those of the individual and may not represent the views of parent to parent.
This podcast is brought to you by Parent to Parent. Please note, any views or opinions expressed by the speakers are of the individual speakers themselves and do not necessarily represent Parent to Parent as an organisation.
Welcome to Connect, Inform, Support on Free FM 89.0. Brought to you by Parent to Parent, the not-for-profit organisation supporting families and whānau of babies, children, teens and adults with any type of disability or health impairment.
Hello humans, welcome to Connect, Inform, Support. I'm Louise, your producer, host and altogether awesome unicorn of gloriousness. Today we're going to be continuing the topic parenting siblings with and without special needs, and we're going to be talking to a colleague of mine, Rebecca Armstrong. She's a researcher for Parent to Parent and she researches complex requests and consults with the Professional Expert Group. She also writes for the Altogether Autism Journal and is involved in the PRISM Professional Development Series. She's completed a master's degree in applied psychology and she's worked with children with autism in the school and home environment since 2013. She's currently studying alongside working for Parent to Parent for a postgraduate diploma in the practice of clinical psychology. She's also a parent of two. Welcome to the show, Rebecca. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me here.
So we're going to talk about parenting and specifically parenting kids with and without special needs, but looking at the parenting side of it and how parents can essentially look after themselves and make sure that they're giving their best self to their kids. So Rebecca, you were going to talk about parenting and self-compassion. What exactly does that mean?
I think we're socialised as parents to put other people's needs first. We're socialised as women as well, not just parents, to put other people's needs first, that asking for help is seen as a weakness. We're kind of given these messages as we grow up. So, when I talk about parenting and self-compassion, I'm talking about looking and treating yourself with kindness that you treat others, or respecting your own feelings and understanding your own humanity and being kind to yourself and no blame and shame, no judgment, just actually knowing that you're doing the best you can with the tools that you have. And parenting can be challenging, and especially parenting children with special needs as well, it's not a walk in the park sometimes.
No, definitely not.
So when I talk about kindness and self-compassion, it's really applying that kindness to yourself. I'm a very firm believer of before you look after others, you need to look after yourself. And self-care isn't selfish. Self-care is essential.
I think that's what people have difficulty with the concept of self-care. Some people see it as putting your wants above everybody else's needs, whereas it's putting your needs above everybody else's wants. So you look after yourself in order to be able to look after everybody else. If you're empty, if you've got nothing to give, then you can't help anyone else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we know that mothers, especially of special needs children, end up with higher anxiety, higher feelings of low mood, depression, all these kind of experiences. And if you're already working from banks that are depleted of any resources, such as your energy, your time, your motivation, your emotions are an empty, essentially, then it's harder to actually care for others. So it's that concept of filling your own reserves. It's that concept of filling your own energy banks, finding things that refuel you, whether that's even just 5 minutes of breathing out in the garden or, you know, these things that taking these moments where you can and scheduling in time for yourself. If you are, you know, we live in a very busy society that is usually, we are very time poor and we are overcommitted a lot of the time. So finding moments for yourself within that time and finding what works for you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people find that they don't feel that they can ask for help in order to get those moments, because they feel asking for help for something that's going to be beneficial to them is inherently selfish. Whereas we need to teach people that asking someone to mind your kids for you for half an hour while you just go and have a coffee is perfectly reasonable.
Absolutely. And it fosters that sense of community as well, doesn't it? You know, people actually, one of the things that increase mental health and well-being is giving. And so actually asking for help and allowing others to help us can also be beneficial for those other people who have that sense of purpose and giving. So asking for help can be beneficial to those who are helping as well. It's not a burden.
And also, like you say, accepting help when it's offered as well. I think we all often find it difficult to take someone up on an offer because we either don't believe them, though we think they're just being polite or they're just saying it as words, they don't actually mean it. But as an English person coming into New Zealand, Kiwis mean what they say. This is my general experience, is that English people tend to not mean what they say. So I've had to learn coming here that if someone says, hey, call me, we'll go for coffee, they really do mean it. And if you say to someone, oh yeah, I'll be home tomorrow, pop round for a cup of tea, they'll probably show up on your doorstep. And as an English person, that was quite surprising that people actually did that. It wasn't just platitudes.
Yeah.
So I think we have to just remind people that Kiwis are a hospitable bunch and we need to believe each other when we offer help.
Yeah, yeah. And it's genuine.
Yeah, it's genuine, like, and it's not done in a judgmental, you're not coping, I'm going to judge you kind of way. It's like, wow, you're struggling, let me help. I've got some time free. Or, you know, your kids and my kids are friends, let's get them together. You go out and have a coffee or go do your shopping in peace, you know. Little things like that. And just like you said, recognising that it's not a weakness, it's actually a strength to be able to say, no, I can't do this on my own. I need some help.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that.
Yeah. So with dealing with kids, parenting is a flipping hard work, as we all know, with or without special needs. It's exhausting. And if I'd known how bad it was going to be, maybe I wouldn't have signed up to it. But, you know, don't tell my kids that. But one of the things we were talking about was with challenging behaviour, difficult behaviour when kids act up. And quite often we find siblings of children with special needs may act out by expressing their feelings in ways that we deem unacceptable, and how we can deal with that as parents. You know, where can we go with that if our kid's playing up? What do we do?
Yeah, well, that's a big topic in itself,
exactly.
Isn't it?
So, I mean, one of the things I've learned through parent to parent is initially changing how I see the behaviour. So rather than seeing it as bad behaviour, looking at it from another perspective. So what's your researcher's take on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. There's actually one of my favourite books in terms of when it comes to behaviour is by Ross Green, and he talks about reframing behaviour. So rather than looking at a child, you know, it's the language we use around behaviour as well. You know, that child's doing this behaviour because they want attention. You know, they're doing it because they're naughty. But actually, kids do well when they can. And it may not be that they won't do something or that they are behaving in a particular way intentionally, but it may be that they actually don't know the correct way to behave in situations, or they actually, you know, kids do well if they can.
Yeah, exactly. And they want to do right.
Yeah. So rather than coming from that place of judgment and you know, and assuming that it is for a particular reason, come from it from a curious kind of place. You know, what's going on for this child in this situation? Why are they behaving in this way? You know, this is stressful for all involved. Like, what can we do to, what skills are lacking here? What can we do to help teach the more appropriate skills in this situation, you know? You know, if find the stressors that's causing these behaviors, reduce them.
Yeah.
you know, find what unmet needs are occurring and meet them.
And
find skill deficits, find what's going on, what skills are lacking or what they're struggling with, and teach them.
Yeah.
So these kind of, rather than naughty, punishment, reward kind of, you know, I mean, that has its place as well, of course. But as a curious detective almost of behaviour and thinking, actually, kids do good when they can. If a kid knows how to behave in a situation, you know, that behaviour is a communication. What are they communicating to us?
I think that's going to be quite a hard concept for a lot of parents to take on board. I know it took me a while and I still struggle with it, the idea that kids are not doing something on purpose. If they, you know, even if they know the rules, for, you know, on a basic level, they know they're not supposed to jump on the sofa. But we also have to remember age appropriate. We keep looking at kids through adult eyes and we forget what it's like to be 8 years old and to not really have much impulse control.
Yeah. And I think sometimes maybe jumping on the sofa is a lot more fun than getting, you know, the reward pays off more than mum tells me off. But, oh, well, I got to jump on the sofa and have a bit of fun.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, sometimes a payoff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then a lot of parents might think, oh, well, maybe I need to make harsher punishments for doing this bad behaviour, inverted commas. So, I mean, how do we teach parents to manage this sort of behaviour in this kind of way without it being constantly ramping up the punishment to make the kid comply, as it were?
I think in that, say that specific situation is a nice little example. Obviously that child is getting something from jumping on the couch, and especially if you've got a child that might have sensory requirements so maybe it's telling you that that child needs some kind of sensory input. They might be seeking some jumping, the wind, the feeling. So it's probably more about providing, okay, you're not allowed to jump on the sofa. There is the rules. It could break. It's inside. There's a window right there, you know, explaining why, but providing an opportunity of where they can get that, that same sensory input. Is there a trampoline? Is there a little... You know, you can get those little ones that maybe they could jump on. You know,
An alternative.
Be creative. Sometimes I think parenting is all about being a bit more creative with the resources we have.
Yeah.
But that, for that specific example, I think it's providing opportunities, talking with the child, working with the child.
Yeah.
Make it collaborative.
Children working for the family, working for the foreman. It's a very hard for me, working for the dollar, working for the food we eat, working for the tax man. He takes what he needs. Hot sun beating down on you, can't till the day is through.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing is collaborative and negotiating. And I think a lot of parents, my husband included, is very much I'm in charge, you do what I tell you, because what I tell you is the correct thing, and you need to not question me because I know what I'm talking about. Whereas I'm much more, and I'm becoming a lot more of a negotiator, a lot more of a what's going on here.
Yeah.
So I'm trying, husband is doing better at listening and coming more to the negotiating table, but his natural go-to is still dictatorial rather than negotiator. So it's quite a tough one teaching someone who's always parented and has been raised with that parenting mindset. His own parents were the same.
Yeah,
they told you what to do, you do what you're told. And it wasn't questioned.
So, children are seen, not heard.
Yeah, or just do what you're told because dad says so. That's what you do. And I don't quite know what if you didn't do what you're told.
But you just did what you're told.
Yeah, we just did what you're told. So whereas I was raised with more of a, there was expectations placed on me for certain behaviours, but there was more of a negotiating aspect, more of a discussion aspect. Especially as I got older and became a teenager, there was a lot more talking about what the expectations were and why. A lot of why questions were answered. And I try and do that with my kids. But, so how do we teach a parent who's used to just saying, do as you're told, to reframe that?
Yeah, I think, again, that's very individual. Yeah. Some people will be more open to that than others.
Yeah, people have to be open to the change, I suppose.
Yeah, but I think you mentioned something really good there when you talked about our own expectations and what we, as parents, expect from our children, sometimes probably more than is capable in some situations. Kind of see them as little adults, but actually developmentally they don't have that same abstract thinking that we have. They don't see the world in the same way that we see the world. Remembering that sometimes is important. But looking at, I think when we're talking about behaviour, when we're talking about, I mean, this comes into siblings as well, but we're talking about what are our expectations? Are they realistic? And remembering that equal doesn't mean fair
remembering their kids at the end of the day and reminding yourself that children behave in inexplicable and confusing ways.
Yeah, and sometimes it's our expectations or as parents, our expectations that actually need to change, or our behaviour or our acceptance. And remembering that children are their own little personalities and they're not, we can't control them. I mean, we're there to guide them and teach them and help them to be safe in the world, and to be functional little people.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And I think that's it. Parents need to maybe reassess their roles and almost try not to apply how you were raised to it if it's not necessarily working. If you were raised to do as you're told unquestioningly, think about why that would work. What would that achieve in the real world? Obeying orders unquestioningly leads to quite horrific things sometimes. So, teaching your kids to question you, although frustrating and infuriating, means that they're developing their own sense of morality and things like that.
Yeah, and to a point as well. It's a really difficult concept to apply to everyone. Family situation is so different. And what works with one child, such as very clear guidance and strict rules, and those might work really well for that family.
Oh, yeah.
And then what works for another might be that more flexible, negotiative kind of dynamic. So again, it's very dependent on the family, on the individual. But I think if parents can, you sit back, you reflect, and it's like, why am I wanting to change this behavior? Why am I feeling this way? What's going on? I know I'm doing the best that I can. Back to that self-compassion again.
Reminding yourself that why are you trying to make this kid comply with this particular rule? What's the end result supposed to be? What are you hoping for?
Yeah.
And can you get that same result a different way? Or does this end result actually matter at the end of the day? One of the things I learned about on various parenting courses was to think about, will it matter in 10 minutes? Will it matter in 10 weeks? Will it matter in 10 months? Will it matter in 10 years? And you think, if it's really not going to matter in a couple of weeks' time, why am I fighting about it now?
Yeah. And then we could get into those. I know personally I do get into those little battles.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're fighting and you're actually thinking, oh, this is such a purposeless. Yeah. There is no purpose to this argument. Yeah, and now exactly. It's just a battle of wills.
That's what it comes down to.
And I'm likely to not win.
Yeah, exactly. It comes down to who's going to cave in first.
Just getting frustrated and getting my own, like, wound up emotionally myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, you have to just stop and go, hang on, this is a pointless argument. We're not getting anywhere. I'm going to go away and calm down.
Which is very hard to do in the moment.
It is. It's extremely hard.
And I think
hard,
it's being gentle with ourselves, walking away and thinking, oh, I could have handled that a bit better.
Yeah.
Next time, you know, be a bit reflective.
Yeah.
And come up with strategies for yourself to deal with things next time.
And being willing to show that vulnerability to your children as well, I think, is really important. A lot of people are afraid to back down or to change their mind or to apologise to kids because they fear it shows some sort of vulnerability that the kid will then exploit in future, which isn't true. You know, I've learned myself that by being more human and saying to kids, hey, look, I messed up. I shouldn't have yelled at you. That was wrong. I'm sorry. And then just sort of moving on from there, my kids are much more likely to come and repeat that back to me when they've had a bad day. Like they'll lose their temper and then 5 minutes later they'll go back, I'm sorry, I yelled, Mummy. And that's because I demonstrated the behaviour I wanted to see in them. And it was quite difficult to be vulnerable like that to my kids. But it's been really positive. It's had a very positive effect.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to that open and honest communication, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And allowing your children to see your humanity and allowing them to know that it's okay to express these feelings, that we're not always happy, we're not always in a positive mood, and we don't always know how to deal with situations.
Yeah, exactly.
We're human, and so is everybody else.
Yeah.
And so that real sense of, you know, it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think...
And giving the kids that sort of safe zone where they know they can lose their temper, they can fight with their siblings, they can say something they wouldn't necessarily mean, and they're not going to be vilified for it. They're not going to be punished for having normal feelings, and to show them that, yeah, we all lose it sometimes. We all say things we don't mean, but we're a family. We love each other. We all go calm down, and then we come back and we talk about it and we sort it out. I think that's important. And for especially in families where there's extra stresses of special needs and health impairments, whatever, teaching those kids that, yeah, you might lose it occasionally, but we're all still here to look after each other, and that's okay.
Yeah. And sometimes even, you know, some of our children with special needs actually struggle with putting their own feelings and thoughts and emotions into words. So sometimes modeling that behavior, it's almost like an external, you know, narrative. I'm feeling this way because this happened, and you know, it made me feel sad, so next time I would prefer this to happen. Sometimes just that can be starting to teach that that way of putting words to our thoughts, to our feelings, and
exactly
that in itself can be really beneficial.
Being able to give the kids a voice that they may not otherwise have, in lots of different ways. And the other thing we were talking about is teaching kids about parenting having to be different for each child, about the fair versus equal thing. So I've been trying to teach my kids that they don't all get the same stuff, because especially now they're all different ages and they've got significantly different needs. They're not going to get the same things, and that's quite a hard concept to get through to them. You have something there about fair versus equal, so tell us about that.
It is a really important, like, it's a hard concept to get through. I'm thinking siblings here, especially when they see, you know, a special need child getting a lot more attention, feeling a bit left out, or feeling like, why do they get away with something that I wouldn't get away with? And so this fear is not always equal concept. There's a nice little analogy, actually, that talks about talking with your kids about fear is not always equal. And you can kind of compare it to, you know, being a parent or being a teacher is like being a doctor. And, you know, kids go to the doctor with different needs. One might go with a scraped knee. One might go with a broken arm. One might go with a cough. And one might go with a sore stomach. Now, if it was fair or if it was equal, then the doctor would give all of those people the same treatment. Here you go. Here's cough medicine. All those people have cough medicine. But actually, that's only going to help one of those people because they all need different things.
Yeah.
And kind of liken that to in the at home or in the classroom, you know, every child learns differently. Every child has different needs, different requirements to help them. Some people might be very visual. Some people might like to read.
And some kids, like you said before, might need sensory input that other kids might not get. So one kid might be allowed to go and run around the playground three times and you might not, because you don't need that. You might want to do it, but you don't need it for your own ability to focus.
Yeah, so... Although sometimes I think that would be helpful for those kids.
That's true. Brain breaks.
Get them all running around around the playground for 3 minutes. That's again a classroom situation more than a. But mind you, sometimes at home, if your child's restless and getting them to run around the house. definitely that fear is not always equal. It is hard to get children to understand that, but. Again, it's that open and honest communication, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it comes back to it.
Yeah, it's such a big one, I think.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming and talking to us, Rebecca. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
As listeners are aware, I like to play music on our podcasts, and while I generally pick music that is either by disabled artists or has a message in the lyrics that relates to the topic we're discussing that week, I would like to have more original music from New Zealand artists, and particularly New Zealand artists with a disability. So if you or anyone you know produces music that you would be willing to share with us so we could put it on our podcast, and then we'd link to your website or your Facebook page or whatever band links you had in our show notes, and we'd mention you on the podcast, please do let us know. You can contact me through the Parent to Parent website, parenttoparent.org.nz. So have a look at our website, click the Contact Us button, and the info can get through to me.
Connect, inform, support. Join us next week on Free FM 89.0 for support and information from Parent to Parent. The program can be downloaded as a podcast, and of course you can get more information on our website, parenttoparent.org.nz.
This has been Family, Whānau and Disability from Parent to Parent. I have been your host, Johanna. We hope that you enjoyed the podcast and that you'll join us again soon.